Hey everyone, welcome to the Pot Awareness Podcast, and thanks for joining me. This podcast is specifically for about educating and raising awareness for animals and rescues and organizations across the United States and world. It really goes a long way towards this mission when our listeners rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and all of our other podcast platforms. Also, be sure to check us out on our official website at pawawareness.org and on social media at TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram at pawawareness_podcast. You can check us out for all of our latest bits and clips of our podcast, as well as Pet of the Week and Pet of the Month. If you're listening and involved with an animal rescue organization or have a story of your own that you want to share, reach out to us at info@pawawareness.org and we can get you on the podcast. Thanks for watching, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hey everyone, welcome to today's episode of the Paw Awareness Podcast. Today, I'm lucky to be speaking with Shira Scott Astroff, the founder of the Animal Rescue Mission. Thank you so much for coming on, and I'm just going to go ahead and toss it to you. Go ahead and introduce yourself and what it is that you do.
Thank you so much for having me. I am the founder of the Animal Rescue Mission, and we are a nonprofit rescue in Los Angeles, and we primarily rescue the abused and neglected dogs and sometimes cats all around Los Angeles. We have a shelter in Mexico, and we also take in dogs from other countries. So we pretty much do everything as far as rescuing.
And how do you hear about those dogs and those reports in the LA area? Is it just phone calls, word of mouth? What's that like?
As far as the Los Angeles area, it's nonstop. I get texts, I get emails, social media, the shelters will email us about the urgent dogs, about the sick dogs. We take on, you know, we don't like to take the puppies and the cute little dogs that could be adopted because they don't need us. So we primarily take on the ones that, you know, have a broken leg or are scared, are fear aggressive, the ones that really need a rescue to put in the time and effort to get them better so that they have a chance at a forever home. And those are the ones in Los Angeles. The ones that we rescue in Mexico, a lot of them are, you know, pretty much on death's door when we find them, and we completely rehabilitate them. And some of them, you look at them and you have no idea how they're still alive. And then, you know, after a month, they're running around and they're completely healed. And it's just the most amazing thing to see.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I'm curious too, I feel like every rescue kind of is battling, you know, there's only, whether it's space or money or whatever, there's only so many animals you can help. And you mentioned some of those animals that you do help, but what's that vetting process like I'm sure you can't just say yes to everything, right? And so what does that look like? And maybe what are some scenarios you're seeing that you're helping?
Yeah, it's a great question because, you know, we get probably 500 emails or messages a day from people asking us to save a specific dog. And it's so hard because, of course, we want to save them all. And we can't, we're foster based. So our biggest thing is we need fosters. If I have a foster for a dog, then I could save that dog because no matter what, I can always raise, you know, the money for the medical. I have a trainer who is just amazing. You know, we could provide everything else, but the hardest part is having enough fosters, because I don't want to pull a dog and put them into boarding. I don't think that that's really helping the dog. And I don't like dogs being in cages. If it's temporary, sometimes, you know, I'll pull a dog and have them boarded at my vet for a week. But I don't really like to do that in general. So basically, to answer your question in a very long way, it's hard. You know, we help the dogs that we can. A lot of times I just can't say no and I say yes and then I'm scrambling, but, you know, we've always figured it out. There's definitely been times I've had a couple of dogs here in my bathroom, but you know, it is very hard though, because, you know, I just now got a message on Facebook and it was kind of mean. It was, you know, a networker, and she's like, "I don't understand. You always ignore me." And I wrote back and I'm like, "I'm not ignoring you. I want to help every dog you send me, but I'm getting the same message from, you know, 500 other networkers. So I'm doing the best I can, but you know, it is very hard. You can't save them all, but we save a lot. And the ones that we save, you know, to them, it's everything. So I don't know if that answered the question.
Yeah, you did. And I think you brought up a good point too, where it's people on the other end may not understand, like see what you're seeing, where it's like, "Oh yeah, by the way, I've got 500 emails today." Like, you know, this is a daily thing. I think, and people were like, you know, why aren't you saving this dog? And, but I wanted to ask you too, it's about, so you mentioned you're big on fosters, like having fosters, right? And then you mentioned how you take in the dogs that have, you know, the medical issues or the behavioral problems. So I like, that's, it's not like a regular foster who signs up and it's like, "Hey, here's a puppy and you're going to watch this for a week and it's going to get adopted." So I want to know, like, how do you facilitate and cultivate that foster network that you have? And do they have to go through like any specific type of training or anything like that because of the types of dogs you're dealing with?
Yes, that's a great question. We have a range of fosters. We have the fosters that can take in, you know, the puppy that just needs some basic house training. And then it goes to the fosters that are incredibly experienced and know how to decompress a dog that is so scared or has just came from, you know, the meat trade and is just terrified, shaking in a corner. Every foster goes through a specific process where, you know, we do a background check, they fill out a form, we do a home check, and then our trainer kind of goes over everything with them. And it just depends. There are some fosters that have to go through training with our foster, you know, if they're going to take in the, you know, I'm using air quotes, the aggressive ones. And I'm using air quotes because a lot of times these dogs that are deemed aggressive by the shelter are not at all. But we always have to be prepared and take precautions. But, you know, 90% of the time when we pull a dog that's rescue only because they're deemed aggressive, once you get those dogs out of the shelter, they're not aggressive in the slightest. You really can't judge a dog by how they act in a kennel.
No, I think that's a great point. And it's also too, like, the longer a dog is in a kennel, it can kind of like perpetuate this. It can kind of just spiral out of control. And I've seen that happen with dogs that have been pretty close to me. And you kind of have to, there's more to kind of unravel there. You're like taking dogs from LA, Mexico. Like, what are some, can you talk about some of the issues you're seeing? And maybe you can like for anyone who isn't familiar, and maybe this is like a two-part question, like what you're seeing in LA, what are some big problems you're seeing with dogs? Is it like spay and neuter? Is it, you know, abuse? I don't know. And then Mexico, I imagine they're probably different, but I'm curious to know what you're seeing.
Yeah, they're similar, but also very different. In Mexico, in Tijuana, the biggest problem is that there's no spay and neuter clinic set up or vaccination clinics. There's so many dogs on the streets, they're multiplying. And the biggest thing that we're trying to supply them with there are spay and neuter clinics and vaccinations, because that's going to help the problem the most there is, you know, getting the dog population under control. You know, we have a shelter there and we get a lot of dogs out and we get a lot of the medical, but it's not going to change anything if we don't start spaying and neutering and vaccinating so that, you know, parvo and distemper and coccidia doesn't run so rampant there. So in Mexico, our primary goal is to set up resources so that, you know, they don't need us to come there and help out. In LA, the problem is honestly, to be blunt, like the people are, there's a lot of amazing people, obviously, that, you know, take care of their dogs, are great pet owners, et cetera. But overpopulation is definitely also a problem here because there are too many breeders. There are too many backyard breeders, and the shelters here, you know, they hand out breeding licenses for, I think it's like $150. Why? We have too many dogs. We have dogs dying every day in the shelters. That's a problem. They need to stop doing that. Also, when, you know, LA last year, I think it was, they came out with, oh, our LA shelters are no kill. Well, that's not true. That made people think that, oh, I can dump my dog at the shelter and my dog will be fine. Or, oh, there isn't a problem. The shelters were never no kill. A shelter is allowed to deem themselves no kill if they kill, what is it? 10%.
Yeah, it's like a certain percentage. Is it 10%?
If they kill 10% or less, they're allowed to kill. Sorry, let me start over. If a shelter euthanizes 10% of or less of the animals, they're allowed to deem themselves no kill. However, in the fine print, if a dog has any type of mark for behavior or medical, those dogs are excluded from that number. Also excluded from that number are cats, rabbits, birds, and every other animal in the shelter. So basically, you can euthanize 20 dogs that have a behavior mark and they're not counted in that 10%. And a lot of people don't know that. So, you know, when LA shelters were being claimed no kill, it was such a false narrative. And all of us rescuers were just like, oh my God, that's going to make the problem so much worse. And it did. And shelters are more full than ever right now. And it's a huge problem because we can keep pulling dogs, we can keep rescuing dogs, but until we change the way things are, this will never end. Until breeders stop breeding, until people spay and neuter their dogs and just take more accountability. The other huge issue is the fact that there are a lot of animal abusers and there's no punishment for them. There's no task force. There's no animal control doesn't do anything. And that's something that I am really focused on trying to create is a new animal task force that actually goes and saves these animals from these horrific situations. There's just overall, there's a lot that needs to change because going and rescuing dogs from the shelter every day, that's not going to change things.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point. Essentially, it's like a Band-Aid on a wound. Like, it's not helping the wound out. Like, in order to get to fix that, it has to start with the people, you know, maybe legislation, making rules where, you know, hey, it's illegal to have, you know, you have to have your spay and neuter your dog. I know that some counties are starting to do that, but still, I mean, what do you think? Why do you think the abuse thing is so? Do you think it's hard to pin down the proof? Is that why you think it's like that's the biggest challenge, or what?
Honestly, I would love to talk about this because this is something that needs to be talked about for a long time. You know, people think right now that if they see a dog being beaten, they can call animal control or they could call LAPD and that person will be punished. And that is so far from the truth. LAPD will say, call animal control. Animal control, if you get them on the phone, they won't do anything. They're too busy or, you know, the laws don't protect animals because we have a law that says animal abuse, you know, is a crime. But if no one's enforcing that, then it just sits there. And so for the longest time, we would tell animal control and LAPD about, you know, these abusers that we saw, and they would always say, you need proof. And we started getting proof. And there's actually a few cases right now that I have videos, and they're still not doing anything. So I'm setting up meetings right now with, you know, city officials, and I'm trying to get answers to this because it really doesn't make sense. you know, I'm like 100 pounds soaking wet and I'm going into these, you know, abusers' backyards to go and save a dog. And I shouldn't have to do that. I shouldn't have to risk my life. Or, you know, I'm breaking the law by going onto their property and I shouldn't have to do that. There should be, you know, somebody to call. There are some amazing animal control officers. There are some amazing police officers that do help. But for the most part, there just aren't enough of them to help. And there isn't enough being done. It needs to, animal cruelty needs to be punished.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's really great that you brought that up. And I think it is something that we all need to look into. And it's, you know, because animals are living beings too. And they don't have the right to, I mean, they can't just talk, they can't speak up. Like, that's why we're here. So that's really interesting. You'll have to let me know how those cases go that you're working on. Cause that's, it's something like I'm almost like a TV show or something. Like, I want to like know what's going to happen.
Yeah. It's, you know, this year has definitely changed things for me. I've been rescuing for over 10 years and, you know, I love that we rescue some of the most, I mean, they're all amazing, but we rescue dogs that, you know, didn't have a chance and they have these beautiful endings. But I did realize, you know, several months ago, things aren't changing. This is just like, we're all on like, what do you call it? Like the hamster wheel. And we're all running on that wheel. And I want to keep rescuing dogs, you know, daily as well, of course, but we need to change the way that the system works. And, you know, the most obvious thing is stop breeders. We don't need any more dogs. That's like, if you were to breed humans, it's like, why would you do that? There are so many amazing children in the orphanage that need homes, but you're going to breed more because you want them to look a certain way or you want them to be a certain breed. Like, that's absurd. There are so many amazing dogs dying every day in the shelter. For someone to go to a breeder to buy a dog.
And they're actually like biologically, I don't talk about this with everyone that comes on the podcast because of, it seems like it's a little different. Like everybody's like, oh, just, you know, do what you want or whatever. But the thing is that like, so when someone like you comes on, I don't feel bad talking about it, but it's like, essentially like biologically they're changing, not for the better, because it's like inbreeding and stuff. And if you look at like the pictures of the dogs from like anyone listening, look up dogs like German Shepherds in 1900 versus German Shepherds now. Do that with any breed. And if you haven't, and your mind will get blown. But then the conversation kind of gears around towards people are like, well, I just want this particular dog and I'm doing it from an ethical breeder. That's like the big, I feel like the big argument. And I'm curious your rebuttal, but my mind goes, it's like, by you buying that dog, even at a discounted price, you're perpetuating them selling it at that price. Like if no one buys it, then people are like, well, if no one wants the dog, then won't it go in the shelter? If that's the point, is if no one wants the dog, the price will drop to zero, basic economics, and those dogs will find homes. Like those, there's no way, like those dogs will find homes. That's kind of how my mind works. What's your take on that?
I believe that there is no such thing as an ethical breeder.
Agreed.
When there are thousands of dogs dying daily in shelters, when you're creating more, that is not an ethical thing to be doing. Also, that female dog really doesn't want you to force her to be impregnated, have babies, and have the babies ripped away. They don't really love that. That's not ethical. And in general, because people always say this, well, what about the ethical breeders? There's just nothing ethical about it. There should be no breeders. The only reason that people go to breeders, well, there's a lot of reasons. Like, people are misinformed. They think dogs from breeders will be more healthy. Completely untrue. Because of the inbreeding, because of everything that happens at breeders, bred dogs are the ones that primarily are sick or have issues. People want a specific, you know, look. Well, What does that say about you? Because that dog in the shelter, that mutt, by the way, mutts are the most healthy dogs, but that mutt in the shelter, that's not cute enough for you? What is that? Then you're getting a dog for the wrong reason. Then you're getting a dog because it complements your lifestyle. If you want that little white fluffy dog to sit in your purse, go get a stuffed animal. There are dogs that are dying in the shelters that need homes. And until those dogs all have homes, stop creating more. There's nothing ethical about breeding. Breeders are lazy people that profit off of exploiting animals. And I am obviously very opinionated on this because I like it.
I'm a huge fan. Like I'm right there with you. Like preach. So go for
it. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I didn't want to be doing this with my life. I didn't want to be having to save animals every day. I do it because I have to, because I can't watch the suffering anymore. I didn't grow up and say, I want to rescue animals. Like I wish I didn't have to rescue animals. And if people would be more responsible and if breeders would stop doing what they do, then there would be no need for me. There may even be no need for shelters. But at the very least, if we do have shelters, those dogs would get adopted. Those dogs wouldn't be getting killed at an alarming rate. And that's one thing that people don't know because of these false no-kill narratives. There are thousands of dogs dying every day from a needle or worse at the shelter. And you can't claim ignorance anymore because we all know better. And we also can change it. People that are like, well, things will never change. Well, look at LA. When I moved here, there were pet stores on every corner. No more. That's done. We got rid of that. So we can change things and we have to change things.
I mean, I agree with everything except the part when you said you think everyone knows about it. Like that there's like, and my rebuttal to that is that I don't know. Like because for me, it's really hard. You see things that are probably like traumatizing that are like that, you know, these dogs just for being alive are being put down. And for me, it's really, really hard to believe that everybody, I'm not saying not like that, all the people that are buying from breeders would knowingly realize that there's an opportunity cost here of a dog's life. Like by you buying this dog, like for me, that's, and if that is the truth, then like, you know, I'm in denial about that. And that's really hard for me to like believe that everybody is like that. That's why I'm like, hey, you know, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. That's just my own two cents. You know, that's just like what the way I see it. But
yeah, no, you actually bring up a good point. A lot of people, I guess, a lot of people are aware and they know what they're doing. And, you know, my rescue partners, they'll get messages sometimes from their friends like, I know you're going to be mad, but look at my new dog. And it's like, this isn't a joke. You know where I'm going to be mad. I don't want to talk to you anymore because you think that that's a funny thing. It's not funny. But you are right. A lot of people don't know better. And that's why we still need to educate and need to keep spreading awareness, because there are a lot of people that really think, well, if I go to a humane breeder or, well, you know, I need to get hypoallergenic, so I have to go to a breeder. And there's still the awareness that needs to be spread, which is, you know, you can find a hypoallergenic dog through a rescue. You can basically find almost any dog that you want through a rescue, because the sad reality is the dogs from breeders, most of them end up in the shelters. So there are a lot of people that still aren't fully aware. So I think education does still need to be spread. But I think most people, especially in larger cities like Los Angeles, know better.
It's really bad. I would say like Los Angeles, when I went to Miami, Miami's terrible. Santa Barbara has a lot of like you'll get walk around and there's just these like $3,000 dogs. Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, and that's why it's like, all right, like that's your decision, but at least you need to know about this. Like at least know what's going on. And yeah.
Yeah. I was just visiting my parents in Massapequa Park, New York, where I grew up. And we were walking one day and we passed like four different dogs that were definitely from breeders. And, you know, I had nice conversations with the people and I nicely educated them. they were so receptive. And I'll say they were aware, but they weren't really fully aware of what their choice was doing. And they also, the one thing that they didn't know was where to go to find a rescue dog. So that's something that, you know, I happily told them where to go and that, you know, they should get their dog a friend and this time they can rescue. And I'm not about shaming people. Like, there are people that have dogs from breeders right now. That's okay. But now you know better. So now make, you know, rescue your next dog.
I think that's awesome too, that you were saying that you just were telling people, like, I love that. You're just like, hey, like, you're having that conversation when you see it. That's so cool. I need to start doing that, I feel like.
Yeah, I can't not have a conversation. That's amazing.
I love it. I love it. And yeah, I want to know too, like, where can people follow along? Like, where, like, find out what you're doing, everything like that. Where can we find you on social media?
On social media, we are on Instagram at the Animal Rescue Mission. We are on Facebook. We are now on TikTok.
All right.
and we have our website, which, you know, has all of this information as well, which is www.theanimalrescuemission.org. And we are constantly in need of fosters, volunteers, donations, all the help we can get.
Awesome. And all of that will be linked below wherever you're listening. Make sure to follow along, see everything you guys are doing. I love it. I love what you're doing.
Thank you
so much for coming on and just, yeah, having a talk. It was great.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.